Wisdom, the final frontier to true knowledge. Welcome to Wisdom Trek, where our mission is to create a legacy of wisdom, to seek out discernment and insights, to boldly grow where few have chosen to grow before. Hello, my friend. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, your captain on our journey to increase wisdom and create a living legacy. Thank you for joining us today as we explore wisdom on our second millennium of podcast. This is day 1276 of our trek, and it is Worldview Wednesday. Creating a biblical worldview is important in order to have a proper perspective on today's current events. To establish a biblical worldview, it is required that we also have a proper understanding of God and His Word. Our focus for the next several months on Worldview Wednesday is mastering the Bible through a series of brief insights. These insights are extracted from a book of the same title from one of today's most prominent Hebrew scholars, Dr. Michael S. Heiser. This book is a collection of insights designed to help you understand the Bible better. When we let the Bible be what it is, we can understand it as the original readers did and as the original writers intended. Each week, we will explore two additional insights. So today's lesson will be Mastering the Bible, Writers Used Translations. And our first insight for today, which is insight number 21, is the biblical writers used translations of the Bible. Dr. Heiser shares his own experience as a Bible teacher. He says, "When I was teaching full-time, I'd occasionally hear students lament having to read the Bible in translation. Some would even wonder if they could trust their translations. I would tell the students they need not worry about the issue since biblical writers also use them." Dr. Heiser was speaking primarily about how the New Testament writers quote the Old Testament. The New Testament was written in Greek. The Old Testament was written primarily in Hebrew, with a few portions written in Aramaic. When New Testament writers quote the Old Testament, they usually use something called the Septuagint, which was the ancient Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament. It is interesting to note that the Septuagint wasn't always literal in its translation of the Old Testament. That didn't bother the New Testament writers. For example, a fairly literal rendering of Amos chapter 9, verses 11 and 12 reads like this: "In that day I will restore the fallen house of David. I will repair its damaged walls. From the ruins I will rebuild it and restore its former glory. And Israel will possess what is left of Edom and all the nations I have called to be mine. The Lord has spoken, and He will do these things." In literal terms, the prophecy seems about repairing a physical structure, perhaps a tent booth like mentioned in Deuteronomy chapter 16 verses 13 through 16, or possibly even a wall. Many readers would anticipate the prophecy is about the rebuilding of David's house or, by extension, his dynasty. The result would have been what is left in Eden and all the nations would be possessed by the house of David. The writer Luke quotes this passage in Acts chapter 15 verses 16 and 17, but the wording changes in his rendition. And here it is: "Afterward, I will return and restore the fallen house of David. I will rebuild its ruins and restore it, so that the rest of humanity might seek the Lord, including the Gentiles, all those I have called to be mine. The Lord has spoken." Notice that Edom becomes the rest of humanity in Luke's rendering, while the nations become more specific to the Gentiles. The reason for this difference is that Luke was using the Septuagint. Edomites in the Old Testament were estranged relatives to Israel. In the context of Acts chapter 15, because of Jesus, David's heir, the Gentiles and everyone estranged from God can now be part of the people of God. The Septuagint translation actually makes a theological point of Amos 9 more clear, despite its more than literal wording. The lesson is twofold. First, the biblical writers were not afraid to use translations, so we shouldn't be afraid of it either. And second, sometimes literalism isn't the best way to read something. Now let's move on to insight number 22, which is, the creation stories target the beliefs of other ancient religions. Even people who have never read the Bible know that it talks about the creation of the world. They have heard of Genesis 1, chapter 1, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." Because of our cultural climate, though, these verses and even the idea is controversial, to say the least. Our culture is the product of 17th century Enlightenment and the progress of science since then. particularly with respect to the rise of Darwin's theory of evolution, none of this was in the minds of the biblical writers. The creation story of the Bible don't aim to articulate modern scientific theories. By definition, they couldn't, since they come from a pre-modern era. God wasn't dispensing advanced knowledge either, since no one who received the Bible prior to the modern period would not have understood it. The whole enterprise of inspiration was aimed at bringing people's truth that they could understand, not transmitting cryptic knowledge to an intellectual elite. The creation stories were designed to teach crucial theological ideas. They were deliberately written in ways to take shots at foreign gods and their alleged created powers. This effort is largely lost on us, since most of what's going on in the text can only be discerned by people who read Hebrew and, just as importantly, people who shared the same worldview of the writers. What's happening in Genesis 1 would have been obvious to anyone familiar with the competing creation stories of ancient Egypt, Babylon, and Canaan. For example, Genesis chapter 1 verses 1 through 3, which identifies God as the creator, follows the grammar, syntax, and themes of the Babylonian tales known as Enuma Elish, in which Marduk orders creation. The reference to the deep draws on Canaanite beliefs about the ordering of the world from its primeval waters. The same is true for creation passages outside of Genesis. Psalm chapter 74 verses 12 through 17 links creation to God slaying a great sea beast. Ancient readers would have known that this is a backhanded slap to the face of Baal, who defeats a sea dragon in Canaanite myths. The notion that God created by the spoken word in Genesis chapter 1 verse 3 is a direct attack on the Egyptian creation beliefs preserved in the Memphite theology, where the god Ptah was thought to speak everything into existence. The biblical authors were clever and fearless in putting forth their fundamental theological claim. The world of human existence is a product of the creative power of God of Israel, and no other god, period. We process Genesis in the light of our own age and intellectual battles. To do this is to impose a foreign context on the Bible. When critics chide the Bible for not being scientific, it is they who are ignorant. It is intellectually bankrupt to criticize something for not being what it was never intended to be. The claim of the biblical writers was a supernatural one, affirming the reality of a creator. We need that message even more today than ever, since the worldview of many cultures are predisposed to rejecting the idea of God. Well, that will conclude our lessons for this week on another two insights from Dr. Heiser's book, Mastering the Bible. Next Worldview Wednesday, we will continue with two additional insights. I believe that you'll find each Worldview Wednesday an interesting topic to consider as we build our biblical worldview. Tomorrow, we will continue with our 3-minute humor nugget that will provide you with a bit of cheer, which will help you to lighten up and live a rich and satisfying life. So I encourage your friends and family to join us and then come along with us tomorrow for another day of Wisdom Trek, Creating a Legacy. If you'd like to listen to any of the past 1,275 treks or read the Wisdom Journal, they are all available at wisdom-trek.com. And I encourage you to subscribe to Wisdom Trek on your favorite podcast player so that each day's trek will be downloaded to you automatically. And thank you so much for allowing me to be your guide, your mentor. But most importantly, I am your friend as I serve you through the Wisdom Trek podcast and journal each day. And as we take this trek of life together, let us always live abundantly, love unconditionally, listen intentionally, learn continuously, lend to others generously, lead with integrity, and then leave a living legacy each day. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, reminding you to keep moving forward. Enjoy your journey, and then create a great day every day. See you tomorrow.